Hello, Ole.
How are you?
It's great to have you back on. It was a tremendous session the last time you were on. I really
Thank you,
enjoyed
sir.
it. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. How's the book launch going?
It's there's been some problems with the printers for the editing, but otherwise than that, it's almost there.
Tremendous. We have Tommy with us, of course, but I wanted to talk about one subject. It's the Obama subject. A lot of people are saying that there could be a possible assassination attempt on him at the minute, a possible false flag, because he looks vulnerable at the minute. What's your thoughts on the matter?
I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are saying that they could stage a false flag, they could stage a false assassination attempt to actually make him into a martyr, because he's defeated at the minute, because of Obamacare and various other things. He's actually looking vulnerable at the minute.
Okay, can I come in?
Yeah.
Okay, one thing I want to say is, Tom, you're completely correct. One of the most important things for the New World is not to lose momentum. And through Obamacare and the destruction basically of their medical and welfare system has been exposed as a failure and a liar on every front. And yes, an assassination of him would be one of the greatest ways in which to reinstate the popularity and the blind worship of him that he had back in 2008. So yes, it is a very dangerous possibility.
How much have you looked into the attempted Reagan assassination earlier?
Not that much. It's for me, it looks like that assassination was a bit different from the normal ones or the other ones. And I got a strong feeling that that one was actually orchestrated by George Bush senior, more or less personally, to get Reagan out earlier, on an earlier stage than what actually happened. There was a lot of, there was also with the hostage, the American hostage in Tehran, where the two of them were sort of struggling how to, who would benefit from it. So it actually looks like they delayed the freeing of the hostage for about 100 days or something like that, so that Reagan could use it to be re-elected.
They did, yes, they did. It's a lot of people say about the Reagan assassination. There was two presidents with Reagan. You had the one president before the assassination, then you had a completely different president after the assassination attempt.
Well, look, can I add something again?
Yeah.
The very interesting thing is that when Hinckley went bananas, and by the way, he is connected some in a very loose way with the Lenin thing. This is something that Chris Everett is going to be talking about, I hope, next week on our broadcast. Yeah, podcast. All right. Anyway, Chris Everett has been doing a film on it. But what I wanted to get to is this point. During the 3 hours after that assassination attempt, within those 3 hours, Haig was already in the White House. General Alexander Haig was already in the White House. And remember, he was Secretary of State at that time. And he was trying to take over the government. He was calling himself president. Now,
Exactly, yeah.
if you look at the succession, the Secretary of State has no, I mean, first person is the vice president, yes? Who
Yeah.
takes over in an assassination, yeah?
Yeah.
Vice president next. And then you have the leader, the Speaker of the House is the third. The Secretary of State doesn't even come into it. Yeah. And General Alexander Haig marched into the White House and started demanding that he was given power. And You know what happened? As soon as Reagan recovered, he sacked him, kicked him out of office. Because General Alexander Haig, and you should look at this guy, he's really interesting. He was out of Dr. Strangelove, I tell you. Okay?
Yeah, Oled, how much have you looked into the assassinations of music characters like John Lennon and Bob Marley?
I looked into them quite a lot. I just want to say, when it comes to Alexander Haig, it's also important to know that he is part of the elite. He was a Bilderberger, at least. I know. I don't know about Trilateral or the Council on Foreign, but he's one of the players in there for sure. So that he came in and wanted to take over could very well be part of the whole thing. When it comes to Lennon and Bob Marley, these two also are very... well, if you look into them, they're very distinct assassinations, even though Bob Marley...
The Bob Marley one in particular, they actually attempted to assassinate him once before he actually died. He actually turned to his side. There was a shooting incident.
There was.
Yeah, he turned to his side to avoid the bullet, and he actually was lucky because he thought, right, I'm going to turn to my side and make myself a looser target. And he actually survived that, but
No, the thing was that when it comes to Bob Marley, most people, I think, make a mistake if they think that he was just a reggae Rastafari guy sitting and smoking pot in a corner. Mm-hmm. This was a very, very intelligent guy who also had, he had become a symbol, a political symbol, standing up for the lower classes, the black people and lower classes, their right against wars. He was standing up for peace, unity, unifying people and so on. So he was becoming a big threat to them. And in 1975, there was quite a lot of things going on Jamaica where the elite wanted to control that country. So they sent Kissinger, who's also, he's always, or has been for decades, he and Lord Carrington, these two were always sent in to create conflicts. They were called peace messengers, but their task was to create turbulence, to get the conflict going. And Kissinger came there in 1975, and after that, there was a whole series of different assassination attempts and the sabotage and all kind of things going on Jamaica. And one of the assassins that they sent a task force of assassins as well. And one of the people, his name was Luis Posada Carrillas. Mm-hmm. And he was part of Operation 40. I think last time I was on, we were talking a lot about Operation 40 as well.
Yeah, we were, yeah.
Yeah, he's one of the main members, and he's been active his whole life. Since the Bay of Pigs, all the way up to his late, I don't know how old.
So Operation 40 is basically an assassination squad.
It is an assassination squad, yes, for sure. And they've been active for decades. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this was 75. And then when 76 came, this group was active. And 76, there was this attack just 1 week before, or a few days before this concert. That was, it was two, there were two parties that was fighting each other on the island. And Bob Marley, without knowing that he was being used as a political tool, said yes to come to this concert. And this was, like I say, they shot him before that. But like you say, he was very lucky. The bullet touched his chest, but hit his arm. Mm-hmm. His wife was shot in the back of the head but survived, and his manager, I think he was hit like four or five times when trying to cover Bob.
Yeah, he talked about it on video after. He said he specifically he turned to the side to make himself a lesser target.
Yeah,
for the assassination, he saw somebody shooting, and he thought, right, if I turn to the side, then I'm going to be less of a target.
I tell you, it's called fear. Duck and dive, you know, somebody shooting, let's get out of here.
But he did write, he wrote in songs about the CIA. Yeah. He wrote one specific song, Rasta Ain't In No CIA. He was always talking about the CIA involvement in Jamaica.
Yeah, for sure. They were there very strongly.
Yeah,
but then when the concert came, a week later, even though he had been shot, he went up on stage still with a bandage and everything, even though everybody was saying, my God, they're going to kill you, they're going to kill you. But he, very powerful man, very brave. And he stood up there. And then in the end, he got the leaders of both these two parties up on stage and got them to shake hands.
Yeah, he got them to shake hands.
So, yeah, but then afterwards, he just continued. You know, he went to Gabon. He, his new girlfriend was the daughter of the dictator there. And then after that, he went to Zimbabwe, where it was used to be Rhodesia and had just been liberated. And he stood up there, and he was becoming a massive symbol. So I think that is one of the reasons why they really feared him. They started to fear him. Yeah. And then just... I'm sorry, Tommy. Just 2 seconds.
Okay.
Tommy does want to add something. He's got to get in
just
there.
A few weeks, I think 10 days after that concert, there was a group of... there was this film director who came to visit Bob Marley. He approached him to do a documentary. And he brought with him a gift, and this gift was a pair of boots. And when Bob pulled one of the boots on, the witnesses that were there said that he just cried out in pain. And so he pulled off the boot, and there was this little piece of copper wire inside it that had punctured his big toe. And that was the big toe that he later developed this cancer that in the end killed him. And the man who gave him these boots, his name was Carl Colby, and he's the son of former head of the CIA, Bill Colby. This Carl Colby was also one of the witnesses in the O.J. Simpson trial. He and his wife were both up giving testimonies. So it's these so-called coincidences where key people pop up in different... It happens all over, the time.
Anyway, Tommy, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, well, William Colby, otherwise known as Wild Bill Colby, we got to remember that this is something that, of course, your generation, and I'm talking especially about yours, Tom, and younger, is the fact that the CIA has become the embodiment of the evil. But we can't do it that way. The CIA is not American. It is not American. This is the same network that set up the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, yeah, back with John Wilkes Booth, yeah, back in 1864. These are the same networks. They are the people from the Federal Reserve. They are the people... The CIA is a British operation. It's run by the Crown. And once we get that straight in our minds, then we begin to understand why the CIA is not an American agency working on behalf of the United States. The British have always despised the United States of America and always wanted to use their power, and they've gradually done it over a century. They've taken over the most crucial parts of the United States, starting with the FBI Division 5, which was created by a guy, his name was, he's a Canadian guy, Major Lewis Bloomfield, yeah? And Bloomfield is key because, and of course, the Dulles brothers, educated, of course, in England. Look, when you look at the span of history through the killing of McKinley, yeah? And you look at the assassination attempts against Roosevelt, yeah? What you're looking at is a design which was to bring the United States down. They had to stop this economic difference. Tom, you remember in the last hour we were talking about the economic difference between oligarchical and credit system or Republican system, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
This is the crucial thing. That's why they kill people, because anybody who opposes the New World Order... And by the way, Ola, we were just talking about the Ukrainian president possibly being a target at the moment for an assassination by this grouping. Now, the CIA, as out of Major Lewis Bloomfield's Division 5, they created the CIA. The CIA didn't exist until after the Second World War. And who did they recruit? Well, they recruited people from all over the world, mostly Nazis or ex-Nazis, mm-hmm. fascists, yeah, into this network. And the CIA is not American. We've got to understand it. It's a British-run operation. We've got to get rid of the CIA. Got to get rid of the CIA. It's got to be disbanded. It's unconstitutional. In the same way that the Federal Reserve is unconstitutional, it's a British operation. Federal Reserve is a British operation run through the Bank of England by the Rothschilds, along with the Oppenheimers, etc., etc.
Yeah, you see this throughout all assassinations. Well, a lot of main assassinations. It's anybody going against the New World Order plans or against the greenback currency.
Exactly.
Throughout history. Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought I'd throw that in, you know, because I think it is important that we understand. And it's people like John Lennon who was beginning to understand, and I think Chris Everett is going to be able to give us, you know, lots of information next week. Yeah, from any of our listeners can go to his station. It's called Enigma TV. Yeah, and he has this program. He does a lot of work on the occult because these people, they are the remnants of the Roman Empire. They moved to Constantinople, some, but most of them moved to what later became Venice, yeah? And later they spread because of their economic wealth controlling the monetary system of the Silk Road, yeah? They moved later into Holland, and later, of course, Tom, we suffered the consequences because they came to London.
Yeah, just from your research earlier, how far do you think this goes back, the structure of assassination, this structure of New World Order?
I tell you, on an early stage, when I started to get into this, I just thought it's such a massive, massive subject, and with so many different angles and facets and so on. So I just told myself I need to focus somewhere, and where I focused was on the assassinations themselves, how they were carried out in the street level, I've been letting other people who know better do research in other areas. Mm-hmm. When it comes to going back in history, I cannot talk against Tommy or confirm either. I mean, I've heard all of these things before, but I don't know for sure how long it goes back, but for sure, I think they've been using techniques that goes way back to the Roman ages, and the mentality is exactly the same as during the Second World War, and the fascist, the whole Übermensch type of thing, and with all these weird satanic rituals, and it's just a very bizarre world to get into.
Yeah, well, this is the reason why, Ola, that you might want to listen in to Chris Everett's presentation, because I mean, or look at his work. I mean, he's done really fantastic work on many, many levels. But I will suggest to you that the poisoning of Socrates was the beginning of the whole idea, the technique, you know, of let's get rid of any opposition which shows that the world is a rational, lawful universe. Because these people, if you, I don't know, some people say they are lizards. I don't know anything about that. But I do know that these people have this idea of a zero development of the world. They want status quo at all costs. And when you get a person like Bob Marley who stands up and says, well, what you're doing is nuts, yeah? And when you see somebody who can make reconciliation and also begin to understand that the battle is between development of the human species, in other words, expansion, growth in knowledge, They don't want people to have knowledge, because once you have knowledge, you start to question.
And yeah, Bob Marley also wrote in one of his tracks that they don't want us to get together. They want us to keep us fussing and fighting.
It's divide and conquer. It's the old
divide and conquer.
Well, you see, and this goes back again. You've got to start with Socrates. What was Socrates accused of? He was accused of corrupting the youth. Now, what did they mean in ancient Greece by corrupting the youth? Well, it wasn't having homosexual sex, because that was an accepted thing, so therefore it wasn't that. What they meant by corrupting the youth was the whole idea of the Socratic dialogue. In other words, that two or three people like you, Tom, and I today, having a dialogue to increase our knowledge of the universe and the principles in which it's governed. They don't want that, because otherwise all of these fakers, these priests, these organized religious cults, they have no value, because people will say, killing babies doesn't actually make the sun come up in the morning, does it?
This one subject, actually, thing that I want to talk about with you, Ollie, it's the Batman shooting, the shooting in the cinema. I don't know how much you've looked into this, but a lot of people have said that maybe he was sprayed with some sort of devil's breath, because he seemed to be one person when he was doing it and then one person after.
As far as I haven't looked into that that deeply, because there's so many different of these operations going on nowadays, but what I can say, I really think that it was very clearly that it was a setup, a false flag operation, where the old template using a patsy, blaming it all on him. As far as I know, there were several shooters, and also there were so many different aspects showing that this was prepared. You know, in the Batman movie, there were all these signs talking, showing the what was going to happen, and so on.
The investigative journalists the investigative journalists like Ben Swan have done investigations into this, and from the witnesses, there was multiple shooters, and it seemed like he was under the influence of something, because he basically just gave himself up in the car park and he didn't know what he'd done.
Yeah, but that's the patsy part. The shooters were somebody else, this is what they do. You have skilled assassins that do the job, and these were masked. You know, they go in, they do the job, and then you got the patsy outside just being either mind-controlled or drugged or whatever.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. Was he involved, or was he just wandering about?
I would definitely say he was not involved, but I can't prove that at this point. But normally, they rely on dedicated killers that are good at what they're doing, and the patsies that are taken away, these guys are just controlled somehow, or mentally weak, or they would never be able to do it under stress and so on, do the actual killing, I would say. So this is one, in my opinion, a totally innocent guy who went down for this.
Yeah, I mean, that one alone, it's one that really interests me, actually. But with other ones you discussed, like Sandy Hook and the killing in London, the drummer boy.
The Woolwich.
Yeah, I don't personally think though that those are actually conspiracies, to be fully honest. I've looked at them, I've used my critical thinking, and I think those are actually genuine. I might be wrong, but from my critical thinking, I would say those are genuine, they happened.
Tom, they might have been genuine in the most bizarre sense that you mean. Mm-hmm. I don't mind that you mean that, because it's fine with me. But there is an interesting thing, isn't it? Wasn't it MI5 who gave the gun to the mother who gave it to her son?
Yeah, that's, well, I see the drummer boy was genuine, but I do leave it open that MI5 were well involved in the situation. I don't believe in the actor situation or the stagedness of the event. I believe that they could have messed with these guys and set them up as patsies. Yeah.
That was random. Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely random. But they gave them the incentive and mm-hmm. They let them loose. It's a little bit like the way in which Al-Qaeda functions in Syria. Mm-hmm. Al-Qaeda is not under the direct control of the Americans, the CIA. It's not like that. The Al-Qaeda forces, after they were let loose, basically from Libya, they were given certain monies. Yep. They weren't directed to do one particular thing. They were given a general cause, which was apparently the cause of jihad. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And they don't understand that they are being manipulated, but the weapons definitely come mm-hmm. from outside. They didn't build them themselves. And mm-hmm. the bazookas and air-to-surface missiles that they have mm-hmm. acquired, we know come from Benghazi. We know that is true.
All I'm saying is I don't believe that those two events were staged. There weren't actors involved in it. I believe that people could have manipulated the situation, but I don't know that. I don't believe that the whole situation that played out was manipulated on the day.
No, exactly. What I'm saying is that it became a random thing. They were at the time. Rigby himself was the victim of an arbitrary event, mm-hmm. which just was. It could have happened to any other soldier who mm-hmm. just walked by.
I totally disagree with you.
I know that. I respect 100%. Your opinion.
The Woolwich was so staged. It was incredibly, and it was so sloppily done. And I mean, when you look at
Ola, maybe you misunderstood me. Do you mean that they actually targeted that particular soldier?
No, I don't think there was even a death. There was no death, as far as I can see. There was no real event at all. I've been. I lived on Mallorca quite a few years, and I did a lot of work as an extra, you know, background action, where you are being driven to different film stages, you know, and where I was one of the people walking in the background, having to walk from point A to B, doing the same again and again, and where the whole thing was. So I know the film, how you set up a film stage, a film, you know, with background action, with front actors in the front and so on. And I can only say that once you start looking into the details, this makes perfect sense as a stage event and no sense at all as a real event.
Okay. Ola, can I ask you then a question? Because this fascinates me, what you're saying. And it goes into something that I always wondered, is what happened to the aircraft on 9/11 that disappeared? We know about the two that crashed in to the towers. Where did the other two aeroplanes go? Because definitely the Pentagon wasn't hit by an aeroplane, and the one in Pennsylvania seems to have disappeared into thin air. So what you are saying is, in a way, something that fascinates me. And I want to ask you a question again, Ola. What happened to Rigby then? I mean, he was a human being, so yeah. Where is he?
What about the footage you didn't get an actual, well, just before he was hit?
Listen, if this had been a real event, if you look at it, the whole thing takes from when Rigby is hit until these guys are picked up or shot down by the police. There's about 25, 30 minutes, yeah? If you have a normal violent event, for instance, if you see on YouTube somebody is drunk and get on a truck and they drive into and hit different cars and so on, people that see it, they get furious, and they try to stop whatever maniac it is, they start throwing things at them, or they try and grab them and pull them out of the vehicle or whatever. Then they beat them until the police arrives. In this case, there's absolutely no reaction from the background. They're just standing, picking their nose, doing absolutely nothing. There are no cameras working. There are no car cues. This is midday traffic. There are no cars honking. There's no traffic jams. There's no people getting involved. There's no people. You got the blood in front of the... There's, in the first pictures, there's no blood. There's a body lying there that you can't see. Then you got this woman who interferes and lies down next to a beheaded body, then stands up once again. Totally, there's no feelings, no nothing. You got this car that is coming on the left-hand side, but apparently going across the meeting lane, going up on the pavement and hitting Rigby with a signpost. No skid marks, no breaking.
It was interesting that they said that Rigby was... hang on a minute. They said that Rigby was hit on the path, but the video that they've just released, he was hit in the middle of the road. So he basically must have fell where they said he fell. Where the body actually was. So this story of them dragging... they're still actually saying this story of the body was dragged onto the road from the path, when the video actually shows him actually being hit in the middle of the road. So he would have fell straight in the middle of the road. So why are they keeping this story of he was pulled from the path?
Yep. One question I have for Ola. Do you think that the man, Rigby, didn't exist? Or did he exist?
I would say, I don't know for sure, but I would think that he did not exist. Very often but I don't know this background. They create these identities Photoshop together a face and a whole thing like this. And then they put it together in very badly scripts, I think, really to get the emotions going. I mean, this thing that he had a T-shirt on with Help for Heroes. Yeah. There's one thing as well.
It's a hoodie,
this was
actually
a soldier, yeah? And he was killed in an awful, awful way just outside his army barracks. Mm-hmm. Would you tell me that there's like 200 of his friends in the army barracks not coming out to help him in 25, 30 minutes?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said about... That's why, Ola, I went down that road about those bloody missing planes from 9/11.
Yeah, hang on a minute. For me, it's one conspiracy too far for me. I do respect your point on it, and I do leave the window open that that's possible. I don't ever exclude anything as possible.
Can I just say that one of the things they do is you got the old problem reaction solutions. That one of the major methods they're using on a regular basis. But diversion is another major one. Mm-hmm. You know, take away the attention from the public mind away from something. And if you remember, this happened just about a week before the Bilderberg meeting.
We were there. Me and Tommy were at Bilderberg.
Yeah, exactly. So it was just like when the media was starting to wake up to the fact that, wait, what's going on? What's going on? So they were starting to focus on the Bilderberg meeting. And what happened? Boom, this thing. And then the whole attention was pulled away just looking at this thing.
Yeah, my friend actually said on Facebook at the time, he was saying that, this is a distraction from Bilderberg.
Yeah, totally.
But for me, it was one conspiracy too far.
Well, look.
And just on top of that, I have looked at both sides of the argument, and I have looked at the debunking of what happened there. And I've made a critical decision,
Can I just say another thing when it comes to these to these film sets and staged events where I've been part, not the stage sort of like false flags, but film stages and so on. There's always... more or less always white trucks for these film sets, where what they bring is there's one makeup van, there's one sometimes they transport the clothing as well in the one of these trucks, another one is all of these different equipments, white trucks, and then you bring in the extras with one or two or three buses, whatever, however many are needed. And if you look at what had happened in Woolwich, the vehicles that are parked that block the traffic, there's one white truck, and behind that there's one big bus, and there's a bus where the filming starts from the inside, and then there's a cab. So actually, what you have, you've got the traffic light down the roads made a redirection of the normal traffic. Then there are two buses for the extras. There's one white thing where they got the makeup, clothing, and extra like lighting and so on. And then you got a cab that is just parked there to block off. So these are the vehicles that are involved, and they're identical to what would be at a normal film shoot.
It seems a bit too complicated. I think in assassination attempts and all other false flags, I think they try to keep things simple. I think
it's super simple.
It's a bit overcomplicated. I think there's a few more variables in there.
I totally disagree.
Yeah, okay. Tom and Ola, please, I happen to lean towards Ola because I'm sorry. I've seen this sort of stuff before, and I've seen how indifferent the public are.
Hang on, Tommy. The reason that I actually leave it open is because of Operation Gladio. Anything is possible because of Operation Gladio.
I wouldn't
excuse your belief, and my belief is, you know, it's an official event, but it could have been manipulated from the external sources through MI5 to actually carry out the event. But I don't think the event on the day was staged. But I leave the possibility open that it was staged. I'm not going to say that you're false or anything like that.
No. But Tom, can I just say I totally agree with you when it comes to Gladio and so on. I've spent many years looking at them, and I mean they're behind so many real awful, violent events. But if this had been a real event, then you would have seen the evidence work. They could have just hit this guy with the car, killed him, you know, chopped his head off, all of that. But then you would have had skid marks, you would have had normal traffic, you would have had the background act, you know, like people really getting involved, starting throwing rocks at them. You would have like hundreds of soldiers coming up from the army barracks.
The thing for me, Ollie, I don't think they chopped his head off. I don't think they beheaded him.
That is what we were being told.
For me, the one thing that came out of it, I don't think he was actually beheaded. Because there was conflicting stories about him being beheaded. And if they had beheaded him, I'm sure they would have picked his head up and showed it on camera.
Yeah, exactly.
And I also want to say to Ola that very, very interesting question. And I think, Tom, probably in the back of your mind is this question. Ola, the actors of this scenario, but what do they do with them? Or do you think that these people who participated are bribed? Or why don't they speak out about it? Or will we have to wait until, 50 years from now, like with the Kennedy assassination, for people on their deathbeds to admit that it was all a setup?
It's a very good question. I can't answer that because that is a big question mark to myself. What I do know is I was on Truth Frequency Radio a while ago, and one of the hosts there had made an application as one of these crisis actors. So, and they recorded the whole phone call where he applied for the job, and they were called in. He was called in for what do you call it?
Interview.
When you go to interview, but also like they test, they try you out in front
of
camera.
Yeah, like a role player.
Yeah, and so it was really interesting to listen to that. I can find that and put up on my website.
Yeah, what actually happened there?
No, he was accepted. And the thing is, when you speak to the producer, they're so relaxed about it. They're like, yes, of course, yeah, we like. So what part do you think you could play? And he said, well, I used to be a teacher. Oh, they said, teachers, that's really good. We need teachers, you know, because this is one. Maybe you could play the headmaster or something like that. He said, yeah, I've got a beard. So, yeah, that could work, maybe if you get glasses and so on. And he said, but I live in New Mexico. Do you think? Yeah, no, but we got things coming up in New Mexico soon. So for sure, for sure. And
did they talk about the purpose of this?
Not openly, but it's like, what I have no idea. I do not know, Tommy, because this is a big question mark for me as well. What do they do with these people? Are they somehow paid really a lot, or are they tricked into believing that they're doing something good and
keep their mouth shut after?
Or have they got? I don't know.
No, but I would suggest to you that there's a very interesting thing. We've got two planes go missing on 9/11.
Yeah, I wanted to get back to that point, actually. What's your thoughts, Ollie, on 9/11?
Totally staged. I mean, it's a total inside job, for sure. But these planes, I mean, we're talking Operation Northwood, and these where the planes take off, they're filled with not normal passengers. They're filled with CIA operatives that go on board.
You're talking about the third full planes, yeah.
There was only a third full plane. And so they take off, and then they start on their route, but suddenly they go off radar for a little while. In that time when they're off radar, they get exchanged by a different plane, a drone or whatever plane that was, that took over. And then the plane with the passengers go down again, land, and people get off it. And then these other planes, or whatever it was that hit the towers, because that is a big question mark in my world. Because there's some really, really good documentary, especially one called September Clues, the graphics that we're being presented.
I don't buy that September Clues.
But also when you see all the images of
it's very debunked as well. Just on the planes, you're saying that they might have been took over by other planes. But my thoughts is actually those planes that the people were on were actually radio controlled. I think they were actually all controlled into the towers.
Wow, man, we're getting into some.
You've got Flight 94 that went down in the field. I think that was blown up in the sky.
Yeah, that is an interesting thing. But still, even if that was the case, Tom, you would still find engines.
It was spread across 7 miles. That's the issue.
There were nowhere near enough parts for the whole plane.
Show me the engines made of titanium.
That's the thing. But to explain the spread over 7 miles would be that it blew up in the sky.
You would still find all of the plane there.
Yeah,
they found spread nothing.
They found major pieces over 7 miles, though.
What does major pieces mean? It's just like Tommy says, where are the engines? Where are the passengers? There was nothing.
Yeah, the official story is that it went down the field. But I think it was blew up in the air.
The engines, Tom, you would still
I get you. Hang on a minute, Tommy. There was a plane crash just after 9/11 that went down in Queens in New York, and the engines actually fell before the plane. I do agree that the engines will be found. I've seen those Rolls-Royce engines. I know how big those guys are.
Yeah, exactly. And the one that went into the Pentagon, the wingspan, apparently the wings fell off before it went in. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, and then they say that the engines vaporized because of the heat. I mean, it's just so bad. It's just so bad.
You're going to laugh at this all here, but me and my friend actually have a bet on about the Pentagon, because I bet it was an actual plane that crashed into it remotely, but he bets cruise missile. But our bet over this is actually a kick in the balls.
Well, I would not bet on you in that case.
So I'm puckering up for this kick in the balls.
But there is an interesting thing that might, Ollie, you might want to look into this, because I'm sorry that I'm a bit ill, and tonight I'm really enjoying our conversation, because, and I hope our listeners are, because it is fascinating to go through all the aspects of
it's Flight 93, not 94. Yeah. Well, I don't know why I got 94.
The Pennsylvania one, apparently a jet of that size, in actual fact two jets of those size, the one that went into the Pentagon and the one that went into the field in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. both of those planes suddenly turn up in El Salvador, were repainted and are back in service and still being used by American Air today. So, boom, it's a little bit like those terrorists, yeah, who apparently died in the Twin Tower attacks. And the funny thing is that they are alive and well in the Middle East.
I think that the most ludicrous thing about the whole story is the two passports that flew out of their pockets through the ball of flames and then landed in the street, and the bandana at Flight 93 that was found, which they presented in court. Oh, here's the bandana that the terrorists wore. So we know the terrorists wore bandanas. Perfectly
also,
folded.
There's another one. You got the instructional video, mm-hmm. the video manual on how to fly a 757.
Yes, you've got the bag full of stuff.
But if you look at, put these things together, and you see how badly it's made, but to convince us, because we're so asleep that it's so easy to trick us. And so you just put in the Quran, you put a bandana, you put in a passport. It was a flight it wasn't even an international flight. So why on earth would they bring a passport?
I mean, that's what people said after. They said it was a perfect trail for the FBI to follow.
There you go. You had this bag
from Muhammad Atta left in the airport with basically, I am a terrorist, how to crash a plane into the Trade Center manual in his bag. He had everything saying that, and he had a list of everybody involved. It was a joke.
But listen, if you go back to the Martin Luther King shooting, when they tried to nail James Earl Ray, they put a bag there with lots of crap, you know, like soda pop cans and different things with his fingerprints on, you know, that made absolutely no sense. And then the gun there, or, you know, just to point that way, frame the guy, that's the whole point.
Now,
with these patsies, point.
Now, the most important thing, and I'm sorry I'm interrupting too much, because the conversation you're having is fascinating. And by the way, Ola, I think we'll get Tom on our side eventually. he'll pick it up eventually.
I am on your side. It's just
I know.
Certain things, I've made a decision, but I'll leave your decision open.
We'll hit the listeners with our madness. The most important thing that we need to look at is why these events are being done. And what was the reason for 9/11? Well, if you look at it, it was the Patriot Act, the destruction of the United States Constitution, and also the reason why today I will not fly on an aeroplane. Because I will not go through the security checks to find out whether I'm a terrorist or not. Because this is prison training. This is world governance. This is, Tom, the New World Order imposing terror on everybody. Exactly. And they've used the Islamic card. And to be honest with you, Ola, I would say that it's getting a bit worn out, isn't it? I mean, the Islamic people, the ones that I know, are some of the gentlest kind.
Yeah, it's like what we were talking about earlier, Tommy. It's this connection through the internet. People have actually got friends in Iran. They've got friends in Syria. They realize that they're the same people as us. You know, yeah, they're the same guys. They've got access to the internet. They have the same lives. They go to work. They come back. You know, so people are realizing the humanity now. So it doesn't work. The same techniques of getting people ramped up on one side against another side are not going to work.
They're doing their best, aren't they, Tom?
They're going to keep trying it, but it's not going to work.
But you know, the boogeyman used to be the East Germans and the Russians.
That's right.
Used to be. Yeah.
Then the Cold War went out and they needed, oh my God, we need an enemy on the outside. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we can't keep this whole thing going.
You had communism, you've had the war on drugs. Then you
got the Muslims in because they work really good in media. They look dark and they've got strange names and they come from countries you'd have no idea where they are. So they've been working super good, but now that's getting out of fashion as well. So now they changed the boogeyman into looking like us. You know, he can look anywhere. You know, blonde, blue eyes, whatever. So that you will start fearing even your closest friends and neighbors.
That's a ludicrous thing that said Iran's working on the side of Al Qaeda when it's the total different faction of Islam.
but the
faction of Al Qaeda is one side, one side Sunni, one side Shiite, and to say that Iran's working with them is ludicrous. It's chalk and cheese.
One moment. We also got to realize that Saudi Arabia, these are the Wahhabi type Muslim, not really the Christian type Muslim. In other words, there are some, you know, the majority of Muslims who actually pray and follow the ideas of love in the Quran. They are what I call the Christian Muslims. In other words, they look back to Jesus as one of the prophets. Now, they might claim that Muhammad is the final prophet, but that doesn't matter. At least they look back to Jesus and the message of love in the New Testament. Yeah. So these people are the same as you and I in the respect that their culture comes from Judaic Christianity. But then you have the Wahhabi type people who look at the Quran as a sort of like a war manual. Get rid of all those who are not like us.
They
use this little tiny part of it, the tiny part. It's the same thing as Hitler used Christianity by using the part of the third sermon or the third part of it's part of the Bible. I think it's the one that says you should follow the state, you know, without taking into consideration the other part that says, but you should also give unto God what is God's, you know. But it's like that. Give unto Caesar what Caesar demands or something, yeah? Acts. No, it's not Acts. It's the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. Romans. Oh, yeah, Romans 13. Yeah. And funny, isn't it? It's called Romans 13. Mm-hmm. All right, forget it. It's coincidence. But anyway, Hitler used that in order to say that you must obey the state. You must obey the governor of the time. And remember that every government is temporal. In other words, that what I mean by temporal is that they are here for a limited amount of time in the respect that humanity accepts their governance. But when you say that they are here for eternity, which is like the royalty, I mean what the that we have to accept their governance for the rest of time? No. So what we're looking at here is they play cards, and this is the thing that they do with Russia and Putin. Putin is suddenly the new Stalin, which is a complete and utter lie. Mm-hmm. He's not. And they say, okay, well, you remember the Soviet Union? It was so bad. Russia, 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 and they bang it down your head. so that you forget to look at what Russia is today and the beauty of the Russian multicultural society, and you think, oh, Russia is all those evil people who attacked us in the Second World War. This is nuts. People have to learn their history.
Do you know, I can just say that I've been traveling in many of these so-called strange countries like Iran, Lebanon, Syria, you name it, I've been there, and I've just met so really, really beautiful people, very often in very, very difficult situations because they've been put through a lot of hardship, but the man in the street is normally just a beautiful person who just wants a really nice life with his family and friends and peace, you know, good education for his kids and food on the table and nothing more. You know, this whole, but they're being pulled in as being demons and being guilty of these wars and conflicts that are created by people behind desks in a totally different part of the world.
Yeah,
they have nothing to do with it. They're absolutely innocent to most of these things.
Yeah, and that's why it's not working, especially with Iran, because Iran's a very internet savvy country, and it's connected to the rest of the world. And to Iran's actually listening to podcasts, it's listening to shows like this. You know, and so people actually know what people in Iran, they're just human, just to get the same as anybody else, like you say. If you actually go over there, you just meet them and you realize they're human as well. This is why it's not working.
Many years ago, I took a bicycle from Sweden. I was on my way to South Africa, and I ended up in Iran instead, in the middle of the war between Iran and Iraq.
Yeah.
And at that time, the borders were, it was 84, and at that time I thought the whole country was just filled with crazy people, you know, running around screaming a lot, shooting each other. That was my impression, which most people are being fed here in the West.
Exactly.
But somehow, I don't know why, but I just felt pulled in there. And even though they didn't give out visas at that time, I managed to get one. And I went in there, and instead of meeting all of these crazy people, I met the most beautiful, generous, warm-hearted people in a very, very difficult situation. Mm-hmm. And in the end, it ended with one of my new friends, Iranian friends, got murdered. And then I risked everything. I helped his brother out. I smuggled him out from Iran through former Russia, East Germany, up to Sweden, where he's now a heart specialist, and we managed to get seven more people out there as well. I've written a book about this called Shadow of Tears, and you can find it on my website, lightonconspiracies.com. And with that book, I really try to show what is going on, you know, to instead of it being us and them,
yeah,
that it's we, you know, that to build a bridge between the people's hearts and see beyond colors, see beyond religion, see beyond all of this crap, because we are the same. Exactly. We are the same. And it's just this awful game, or whatever you want to call it, of terror that is being placed on top of us and playing out us against each other. It is not the people there or the people here. We're being manipulated into this, and it's very, that's one of the reasons why I'm taking part of so many interviews and so on, to expose what is going on so we can stop this madness and start heal this planet with love and compassion to build this thing and let the world turn into this beautiful paradise it's supposed to be. Instead of this bully being, because it's like a bully in a schoolyard that is just terrorizing the neighborhood and messing everybody's life up, you know. So by neutralizing, I'm absolutely not saying violence or in any way or hatred or revenge, but by somehow, by exposure, neutralize this power so that the rest of us can just heal. You know, it's like a cancer growth, and by exposing it, we can start healing this body, and once it starts healing, it would just—I think the world is going to turn into an absolute beautiful place, and it's not going to be that far away.
Ola, I'd love to come in on this point that you just made. It is the love principle. I don't know if you read my article, because I'm not very prolific. I write, takes me a long time to be able to put my head together to write things down. But in the piece that I wrote about the love principle and bringing people together to understand that we are all one, not this, you know, it goes together with this the terrible greed that certain people not have, but are forced into by believing. And this, again, I don't like the word belief, but okay, I'll use it. But they believe that the success of their life is through monetary considerations and also their acceptance by other people. Instead of saying, well, I am who I am, and I accept you. I accept you. I accept your structure, the way in which you found, well, the foundation of your particular life. I accept you. I love you the same. Can you love me the same? Because I have a different foundation of my life. And then you've got the people who say, well, look, let's use Smiley Biley and whatever her name is, Biley Miley, yeah? And they make that look like that is the be-end all and of your life, you know? You will be happier if you have lots more money than somebody else. You will be happier if you become a star on Fumble in the Jungle or something like that, yeah? And this is where your problem is, because people are fixated on all of this small, tacky, shiny stuff. And it distracts them from understanding knowledge of history, philosophy. It distracts them from learning about physics and engineering and all the beautiful things that humanity can do. And it doesn't matter where you were born. As you just pointed out, the guy that you managed to smuggle out became a heart surgeon who was saving lives in Sweden.
Ole, we're just to finish off the show, we've got one question from the chat room from Sean. He's asking a question about John Lennon's assassination. He's saying, can you ask how long the doorman worked at the Dakota before the night Lennon was killed? And was he ever on the radar? And any idea what he and Lennon might have been arguing about over that night?
As far as I know, he was only working there very shortly before that. It's tricky to find out that, but as far as I know, his name was José Perdomo, and he was one of the highest ranking officers for about 10 years in Operation 40, this team of assassins from the early 60s. He disappeared right after the assassination into oblivion. And according to other people like Frank Sturgis from Operation 40 as well, who was involved in the JFK assassination, this José Perdomo had died in 1974. And they say it was a different José Perdomo, but as far as I've been able to track down, it's the exact same guy. I've got photos of him at the time of this of the assassination, and you compare that with photos when he was younger and when he was working as a military guy on Cuba. It's the same guy for sure.
Yeah.
It's very hard to know, but what I know is that the police that came the first police that came to the crime scene, he knew José Perdomo by first name. So I don't know. And what they were arguing about, the only thing I know is that there's this woman that you can hear on a YouTube video. She just said he was arguing with a doorman. He was arguing with a doorman. But it was the same José Perdomo who went straight over to Mark Chapman and took away the gun from him. And also, I believe, triggered him into his activated him as a Manchurian candidate with the word. Yeah, you just shot Lennon.
Sean's just thanked you from the chat room. He said he's listened to over 10 of your interviews. Just to tell you offhand, he's very fascinated by all of your work. So,
thank you, Sean. Thanks
very much. We're at the end of the show for this week, actually. So, if you could give off all of your websites and all your contact information for everybody listening.
My website is lightonconspiracies.com, lightonconspiracies.com. And like always, if anybody would like to support me with donation or so, it's extremely appreciated because it's very, very hard to feed a family and at the same time focus. I mean, I put 30 years into this, so any type of support like that or buying my book, Coup d'Etat in Slow Motion, which is also being published in the States now within the next few weeks here in a printed version.
Can I
also just say that I'm really trying to lift this to the next level by making a high-quality documentary about Operation 40 and how that group connects so many of these big political events over the last 50, 60 years. So if anyone knows about anyone who would be interested or who would have the possibility to help me move this forward, when it comes to high quality, not amateur, but high quality, I'm extremely grateful for all types of concepts and so on.
Yeah, I might be able to actually hook you up with somebody. I'm gonna have to do some research over there. I'm gonna have to do a couple of contacts over the next week. But I've got somebody in particular in mind with that who I think will know a lot about the subject. And he's a very good documentary maker. So
that sounds amazing.
Hopefully that'll come off.
Okay, Ola, by the way, you haven't sent me your postal address so that I can send you something I'm doing because I'm trying to spread the information about Enemy Within, True Frequency, and generally the work that we are trying to do. So I'd like to send that to you. And by the way, my email is very, very simple. It's blackhattommy@hotmail.co.uk, and I sound frightening, but I'm actually a wimp. And then the other thing is that I wanted to say is if you want to Skype me, you just go the opposite way, Tommy Blackhat, and I'm in Bexhill, England. If you just Skype me, search me, and then you can talk to me. Don't be afraid of me. I'm not a monster.
Well, thank you once again, Ollie. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and it always is.
Thank you so much, Tommy. The pleasure is mine.
Yeah, it's always fascinating to find out more. So I bid you farewell for this week, and Tommy, the same.
Adios, amigos.
Adios.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.